In the passenger hold of the Trevi, Gaff danced while he sang. Melisma and the other Rim capered with him or accompanied his improvised song on musical instruments. Gaff was only a stanza into a second verse when the Trevi shuddered abruptly. "We're reverting from hyperspace," one of the refugees said when the musicians had stopped playing. Melisma, Gaff, and some of the other Rim hurried expectantly to an observation blister, eager for a first glimpse of Abrogato Ray. But in place of the light green sphere they had expected to see was a brownish world, partially eclipsed by clouds sullied with industrial pollutants and surrounded by hundreds of enormous orbital construction platforms. "This isn't Abrogato Ray," someone behind Melisma said. "Then where are we?" she asked.
"This is Fondor,"
a human male supplied in understated astonishment. All at once, hatches throughout the passenger hold hissed open, admitting a score of heavily armed crew members.
"Slight change of plans, folks," the crew spokesperson announced, the same human the Rin had come to call Tall. "Turns out we're going to have to drop you here."
"But you promised to deliver us to Abrogato Ray," someone thought to point out. Tall grinned.
"Let's just say we overshot our stop."
"Has Fondor agreed to accept us?" someone demanded.
"That's not our concern."
"Then where on Fondor will we be offloaded?"
Tall stared at the Bim who had asked the question.
"Who said anything about Fondor?"
He moved to the observation blister and pointed to a crescent-shaped shipbuilding platform.
"That's where you're getting off. The facility is temporarily unoccupied, but at least you'll have breathable air and artificial gravity."
"What about provisions?" a human asked above the increasing turmoil. Tall waved everyone silent.
"We're not barbarians. We'll provide you with enough flash-dried nutrients to last you a couple of local days."
"A couple of days?" a voice squeaked. "It could be months before anyone finds us."
"Oh, I sincerely doubt that," Tall said. "The Tepani sector is about to become very crowded. Someone's bound to notice you. And we can't afford to be here when the fireworks begin."
With the exception of those in the corporate sector, few planetary systems had been exploited to the degree that Fondor had. Where the colossal corporations that dominated Bilbrinji, Kuat, and other shipbuilding centers made a pretense of picking up after themselves, no such efforts had ever been made at Fondor. Emerging past Fondor's outermost moon, the Falcon was immediately detected and scanned by First Fleet Command. A crisp voice crackled from the cockpit annunciator.
"Millennium Falcon, please state the nature of your business."
"We're supposed to rendezvous with friends who may have arrived ahead of us," Han replied. "Their ship is the Trevi."
"The Trevi received clearance a short while ago. Unfortunately, sir, they made their cargo drop in an area off-limits to unregistered ships."
"Control, can you at least tell us where the Trevi made her drop?" Han asked.
"Negative, sir."
"Understood, Control. Thanks for your help."
Han set his elbows on the console and regarded the misshapen moons and hundreds of active construction platforms that crowded local space. The bright, sweeping crescent of Fondor dominated the backdrop.
"Well, this ought to be a snap. Only a couple of billion cubic kilometers to search, not to mention Fondor itself."
Droma glanced at him.
"We could initiate a drive signature scan for the Trevi."
Han thought about it.
"Hyperspace jumps aren't permitted inside the orbit of Fondor's sixth moon, so they'll be running on repulsor power or sublight."
Engaging the thrusters, Han veered the ship through an abrupt climbing bank. Instantly, the cockpit annunciator came to life.
"Maintain your present position, Falcon. You are entering restricted space. I repeat, maintain..."
"Turn that thing off,"
Han snapped at Droma. Han increased the ship's speed while the navicomputer aimed them for the remotest point of Fondor's elliptical orbit. A host of capital ships, barges, tenders, and freighters came into view, all maneuvering toward various jump points. Abruptly, an indicator on the friend or foe authenticator flashed.
"IR emission and ion exhaust recognition," Droma said excitedly. "Confirmation of the Trevi."
He called up a magnified view of the supplied coordinates, then pointed to the run-down pod-shaped ship at the center of the display screen.
"There!"
Han smiled.
"That's her, all right."
Han reached to his left for the servo that controlled the dorsal quad laser. When they could see the Trevi through the viewport, he tugged the throttle lever toward him, streaking the Falcon beneath the freighter, then barrel rolled to port across the Trevi's blunt bow.
Now they know we're here,
he said, decelerating to hang on the Trevi's twin thrustered tail. They're scanning us, Droma said. Weapons powering up.
Give me a schematic of the ship.
Han glanced at the data Droma retrieved and tapped his forefinger against the display screen.
Their hyperdrive is just forward of the aft fin. Take over.
Droma tightened his hands around the co-pilot's yoke, gluing the Falcon to the Trevi's stern. Han centered the quad laser's targeting reticle over the freighter's sleek stabilizer.
Weapons fire!
The words had scarcely left Droma's mouth when green hyphens of energy raced toward the Falcon, splashing against her forward deflector shield and jarring the ship without doing damage.
Ion cannons, Droma said. They're maintaining target lock. Hyperdrive is enabling.
Energy streaked from the Trevi's aft cannon turret. Droma tipped the Falcon to one side, then the other, then rolled out to starboard and kept the ship inverted while Han lined up his shot. Violent light pulsed from the quad laser's reciprocating barrels, blowing the Trevi's fin away and scoring a ragged line along her aft hull. Gouts of molten alloy streamed from the freighter as she banked in desperation, firing continuously at her pursuer. Droma powered the Falcon through a loop, giving Han a clear shot at the freighter's overheated cannon, which Han quickly put out of its misery. Then, for good measure, Han took out the worthless shield generator.
Open a frequency to the ship, he said.
No response.
Droma glanced at the sensor suite screen.
They're heading straight out of the system all speed.
Han compressed his lips.
What do they think they're doing? They can't jump and they can't outrun us.
Simultaneously with a chime from the hyperwave warning indicator, Han swung forward to see that they were soaring straight into what anyone else might have believed was an uncharted meteor storm. But what he knew to be enemy vessels, decanting to real space by the hundreds. Instinctively, he stood the Falcon on her side, weaving her through a swarm of carrier, destroyer, and cruiser analogs, none of which appeared to take the slightest interest in the Falcon or even the much larger Trevi.
Evasive action,
Droma said. Han wrestled with the controls.
What do you think I'm doing?
Warships continued to materialize to all sides, more than Han would have believed possible, and certainly more than enough to engage and ultimately overwhelm Fondo's defenses. Han swerved the Falcon away from the main battle group, then accelerated as the Trevi had done, if only to distance itself from the onslaught.
That's why they were running, Han remarked. They knew the Yuuzhan Vong were on their way.
His face contorted by anger, he triggered a short burst from the quad lasers, though more to terrorize the crew of the Trevi than to further disable the ship. Then, just when it appeared that both ships had made it safely through the throng, a final enemy vessel emerged. Looking more like a wedded cluster of tough-skinned bubbles than a chunk of scabrous coral, the new arrival narrowly missed colliding with the Trevi, but sent it into an out-of-control tumble nevertheless. Intrigued, Han leaned toward the viewport to have a closer look at the ship, then immediately changed course, vectoring directly for the newcomer.
One-on-one, he snarled. We can live with those odds.
With the Falcon up on its side once more, Han and Droma assailed the cluster ship with sustained bursts from the dorsal and ventral quad lasers. Most of the bolts were engulfed by gravitic anomalies long before they reached the ship, but a surprising few got through. The reason became clear when Han realized that the vessel was taking rear fire from a motley group of New Republic fighters, X-Wings. Han at once sharpened the angle of their attack and shed velocity so that the cluster ship would come across the Falcon's vector. When it did, he and Droma opened up with both guns, hammering the enemy with massive outpourings of energy. Gas and flame belched from the ship. Then one of the spherical components imploded, deflating as if pricked by a pin. Slowing, the ship began to list to port, then rolled completely over like a defeated creature showing its belly to an aggressor.
Thanks for the assist, YT-1300,
someone said over the hailing channel. Han opened a channel to the fighters.
Who are you guys?
Kip's Dozen,
the pilot said.
Kip Duran! What in blazes are you doing out here?
Put off his guard, Kip fell silent for a moment.
Han? Is that you?
He asked tentatively.
None other.
Is that a new paint job, or did you accidentally bring the Falcon too close to a star?
Long story.
So is ours. We've been chasing that bubble ship since Galarba. The Yuuzhan Vong have captives aboard, Worth Skidder among them. What about you?
The freighter at your starboard marooned a group of refugees somewhere in this system. I figure we can convince them to show us where they made the drop.
If you're headed back into that fray, you could do with some support. I'll assign two of my people to fly with you.
I'll take them. But what are you planning to do about the captives?
go aboard and rescue them.
Han uttered a laugh. Leave it to a Jedi to take on the impossible.
May the Force be with you, Han.
Yeah, you too.
Leia followed briskly on the heels of the colonel who had fetched her from her cabin aboard the Yarl, saying only that it was urgent that she join Commodore Brand in the Tactical Information Center. She was stepping from the turbolift on the secure deck that housed the TIC when she nearly collided with Isolde.
Do you have any idea what this is about?
He asked her. The question was pointed, though without his being aware of it. What had begun on Hapes as vague misgiving had now become unmitigated dread. Hours of meditation had allowed Leia to determine that part of her apprehension was centered on Anakin and Jason and the forecasted attack on Corellia. But just how her concerns for them were connected to the foreboding that swirled like excited electrons around Isolde, and more specifically around Commodore Brand's battle plans, she could not say or even guess at. Leia, Isolde said.
I'm sorry, Isolde, she said at last, but I don't know what this is about.
He studied her in silence while they hastened for the war room and entered side by side. On screen, Brand ordered one of the technicians as Leia and Isolde approached. Leia glanced at a nearby array of holographic displays. One holo showed dozens of Yu Zhongvong and New Republic warships firing mercilessly at each other, while wings of snub fighters and coral skippers slalomed through the wreckage of orbital docks. Leia looked at Brand in confusion.
Those aren't Corellian vessels.
Brand showed her one of the saddest looks she had ever seen. The Yu Zhongvong have struck at Fondor. They deceived us into believing they were going to attack Corellia, and they hit Fondor.
The words tumbled from his mouth without emotion.
The First Fleet is doing all it can, but the enemy is literally flinging their coral skippers at any target that presents itself.
The Hapen Fleet is prepared to launch,
Isolde said.
No,
Leia found herself saying. Brand and Isolde stared at her.
No,
she repeated quietly. Brand looked at Isolde.
Thank you, Prince Isolde. But I've already ordered elements of the Fifth Fleet to launch from Bothery. We're waiting to hear from them.
Leia swung to the communication console, her heart racing.
Commodore Command, this is Task Force Aleph,
a distressed voice said.
The enemy has ceded all routes linking Bothery and Fondor with Dovin Basal remotes. Half the task force has been yanked from hyperspace and six ships have been diverted into collisions with mass shadows. We're in harm's way, sir. We have no choice but to retreat to the Outer Rim and jump to Fondor from Eriadu or Sullust.
They'll arrive too late,
Brand muttered. Then turned to Isolde.
You say your forces are prepared?
Isolde straightened to his full and considerable height.
Eager, Commodore.
Leia's breath caught in her throat. And the TIC began to spin before her eyes. She had to hook her arm through Brand's to keep from falling.
Kipteron's X-Wing loosed two proton torpedoes straight at the cluster ship sphere. The Millennium Falcon's quad lasers had perforated and collapsed. The torpedoes did little more than blow a hole in what remained of the deflated globe, but one large and gaping enough to accommodate any of the disparate fighters that made up the dozen.
11 and 12, you have rear guard, Kip said over the tactical net. The rest of you form up on me. We are going inside.
Ganner's modified Y-Wing and seven other starfighters followed him through the breach opened by the torpedoes. Vacuum had bled the module of atmosphere, but gravity was close to human standard, and there was ample room for all nine fighters to settle down on a landing deck.
Breathers and blasters,
Kip said over the net as the X-Wing's canopy was opening. Recalling his first contact with the Yu Zhongvong in the Outer Rim, and the grotesque creature whose secretions had burned through the transparasteel of his XJ, Kip had expected to find similar monstrosities waiting. But in fact, the hold was deserted. Ganner had obviously been thinking the same thing. Jumping agilely from the cockpit of the Y-Wing, Ganner said over the rebreather comm,
"They've probably withdrawn to protect the Yamusk."
Warily, they advanced on the wall of the sphere, searching futilely for anything analogous to a hatch release.
Finally, Kip ignited his lightsaber and thrust it into the wall, gradually opening a circular hole large enough for them to step through.
"There's oxygen in here," Kip reported after glancing at an indicator strapped to his wrist, and they quickly shed their breathers as they moved deeper into the ship. Since entering the vessel, Kip had been struck by the fact that the Force was mute. Not stifled, but silent. His Jedi skills hadn't been affected or compromised in any way, but it was as if he had entered a blank space on a map. All at once, though, he felt something through the Force, and a bit farther along, they came to a sealed portal, similar to many they had passed, save for the feelings it roused. Kip turned to Ganner, who nodded in affirmation. Then he thrust the blade of his lightsaber into the center of the portal. When he retracted the blade, air rushed noisily through the hole into the space beyond, and the portal irised open. Inside sprawled a mixed-species mob of captives. Dressed in ragged robes and tunics, they were a gaunt lot, but alive. Gradually, they began to stir as the hold filled with oxygen. Kip approached one of them, a gray-haired human. Near him lay two Rin males and a female. The man's rheumy eyes blinked open and played across Kip's face, focusing finally on the deactivated lightsaber in his right hand.
"They're holding him on the deck below this one," the human said weakly. "Next module aft. But be careful, Jedi. He may not be the worst skitter you remember."
Several of the more technically minded of the now marooned Ruan refugees had succeeded in getting some of the orbital facility's systems online, so anyone who wished was able to watch the fall of Fondor in full color. Gazing at the chaos through an observation blister, Melisma decided that the Yuuzhang Vong weren't likely to spare even an empty shipyard, which, at the present rate of destruction, meant that the Ruan group had less than an hour to get their affairs in order. True to the fatalism they embraced as a creed, the Rin were singing. Melisma glanced out the viewport.
"I don't know that I have any song left in me, Uncle."
He laughed.
"Of course you do. There's song even in a final breath."
She forced a smile.
"You begin."
Gaff had his mouth open to sing when a Sulistan stationed at one of the data consoles shouted for everyone's attention.
"The Trevi is returning!"
The singing ceased, and groups of folks began to crowd around the console and into the observation blister. Someone off to Melisma's left pointed to a sleek shape weaving its way toward the abandoned facility between missiles and plasma discharges.
"It's definitely the Trevi,"
the Sulistan confirmed. Hopeful exclamations gushed from all sides. "Maybe they had a change of heart."
"Impossible. They got caught up in a battle and are looking for a place to hide."
"Someone learned what they did to us."
"That is a probable explanation," Gaff said in an authoritative voice. He gestured in the direction of the approaching transport.
"I can't imagine where that YT-1300 freighter joined the Trevi, but I'm certain that the other two ships are New Republic starfighters."
Anakin's enabling the Centerpoint Station's interdiction field and starbuster capabilities was momentarily forgotten in the wake of the devastating news the New Republic colonel brought to the control room. The Yuuzhang Vong had launched a sneak attack on Fondor. Thrakken Sal Solo whirled on Anakin, a wild look in his eye.
"We have the time-space coordinates of the Yuuzhang Vong fleet."
He hurried to a console and called up a star chart.
"Their warships are clustered rimward of Fondor's fifth and sixth moons. We can target them by focusing Centerpoint's repulsor beam."
"We have no authority to take such actions,"
a technician said loud enough to be heard over a dozen separate conversations that broke out.
"We could miss and hit Fondor or even its primary. We can't assume the risk."
"We must assume the risk,"
a mechanic argued.
"Fondor is lost if we do nothing."
The New Republic colonel glanced at Sal Solo, who shook his head.
"I can't promise that we'll hit our target."
Everyone turned to Anakin. And Anakin looked at Jason and Ebrahim. Jason set himself boldly between Sal Solo and the console at which Anakin sat.
"We can't be a part of this," he announced.
Thrakken peered around him at Anakin.
"The First Fleet is being decimated, Anakin. The task force launched from Bothawi can't possibly arrive in time to help."
He cut his eyes to the joystick Anakin had conjured.
"It bears your imprint, Anakin. It answers to you and no one else."
"Anakin, you can't," Jason said wide-eyed. "Step away from it. Step away from it now."
Anakin glanced from his brother to the controls before him. Not through the Force, but through Centerpoint itself, he could sense his distant targets. He felt as wedded to the repulsor as he often felt to his lightsaber, and he knew with the same conviction precisely when and how to strike. Lightsabers clenched in two-handed grips, Kip and Ganner approached the chamber in which Worth Skidder was apparently being held. No sooner had Kip's lightsaber coaxed the chamber's portal to open than he caught sight of Skidder. And immediately he grasped what the captive, Roa, had meant by saying that Skidder wasn't likely to be his old self. Stripped naked, he was lying face up on the floor, with his legs bent backward at the knees and his arms extended beyond his head. Surrounding him, and plainly responsible for the cartilaginous growths that wedded him to the deck at knees, insteps, shoulders, elbows, and wrists, were a dozen or so crab-like creatures, a few of whom managed to skitter to safety before Kip's and Ganner's lightsabers could be brought to bear on. The screeching others were cleaved and dismembered, their legs and pincers flung to all quarters of the hold. Kneeling, Kip wedged his hand under Worth's neck and gently lifted his head. Skidder groaned in agony, but his eyes fluttered open.
"You're the last person I expected to see here," he rasped.
Kip made himself smile. "You think we'd let you execute this mission on your own?" Worth laughed shortly and bitterly.
"Chin Kao promised to break me, and he has. Chin Kao, the ship's commander."
Skidder's face contorted, and he moaned in pain. Concealing his hopelessness, Kip took a closer look at the surge coral protrusions that anchored Worth to the pliant deck.
"Our lightsabers should make short work of these," he started to say,
when Worth shook his head violently.
"There isn't time. You have to leave."
Kip looked hard into his comrade's eyes.
"I won't leave you, Worth. We'll find a way to help you. The Force..." "Look at me,"
Skidder interrupted firmly.
"Look at me through the Force. I'm dying, Kip. You can't help me."
Kip opened his mouth to reply, but instead loosed a resigned sigh. Skidder smiled with his eyes.
"I'm prepared, Kip. I'm ready to die. But there are two things I need you to do before you leave this ship."
Kip nodded grimly and leaned his ear closer to his friend's mouth.
"Randa and Chin Kao,"
Worth managed to say.
"Find them."
Alone in the Falcon's cockpit, Han had one hand gripped on the yoke and the other on the servo that operated the dorsal quad laser. Triggering staccato bursts from the weapon, he blew away two approaching coral skimmers. He brought the Falcon about to recon the rimward side of the empty yard in which the Luan refugees had been marooned. Below, Droma and some of the pirates were organizing the recovery, with the Trevi berthed where a construction barge or tender might have anchored if the facility had been operational. Noise crackled from the cockpit annunciators, and a grainy video image of Droma appeared on the comm display screen.
"Han, the Trevi is loading the refugees."
Behind Droma, grinning broadly, were clustered some 10 other Rin, including the two he had introduced earlier as Gaff and Melisma. Melisma was now cradling a Rin infant in her arms.
"Yeah, well, don't waste any time. Looks like a Yuzhong Vong carrier escort has taken a sudden interest in the place."
Droma nodded and signed off. As the Falcon came full circle around the shipyard, the Trevi once more loomed large in the forward viewport. The transport's hyperdrive was ruined, but the sublight drives were more than capable of moving the ship out past the enemy fleet, providing it got away in time. Even as Han was thinking it, the Yuzhong Vong carrier escort hove into view off to port, keen on targeting the shipyard with the projectile launchers concealed in its pitted starboard bow. Han throttled the Falcon toward the intruder, firing steadily, but the escort was too resolved on destroying the shipyard to be bothered by a lone assailant. Just then, though, an X-Wing appeared on the scene, succeeding in getting the escort's attention with two well-placed proton torpedoes that impacted against its blunt nose. The comm screen came to life.
"We're away,"
Droma said.
"Aiming for clear..." clear skies.
Han powered the Falcon through an ascending loop, then veered off to starboard, glimpsing the Trevi and its fighter companion just as they were accelerating from the threatened facility. The dying Yuzhong Vong escort spotted them as well. Missiles sought the fleeing vessels, but the escort reserved the bulk of its barrage for the shipyard itself. Punctured throughout by projectiles, the facility began to disintegrate, and then it blew apart, unfurling flames that scorched the tail of the accelerating transport. Then the escort, too, disappeared in a flash of blinding light.
You have my word that I will devote the remainder of my days to repaying the debt I have this day incurred.
Rhonda bellowed as he trailed Kip and Ganner through the cluster ship, the slapping sounds of his muscular tail loud in the passageway.
Thanks, Skidder, Rhonda, Kip said over his shoulder. If it had been up to me, I would have left you.
Then I will repay the debt in honor of Skidder,
Rhonda said unfazed.
You will see.
As it happened, the two Jedi didn't have long to wait. Rounding a corner in the passageway, they found themselves faced with a phalanx of Yuzhong Vong warriors, into whose midst Rhonda charged, knocking half a dozen aside. Kip and Ganner followed up the rash offensive, felling their opponents with precise strikes to susceptible spots in the warriors' armor. The three of them fought their way toward an enormous maw in the bulkhead. Inside the vast chamber, encircled by attendants, stood a Yuzhong Vong commander with a Villip communicator in his hands. Behind them, raised up on tensed tentacles in a circular tank of foul-smelling liquid, was a maturing Yamosk, a large tooth glistening in its rictus of a mouth, and its massive black eyes riveted on the intruders.
I congratulate you on getting this far, Ching Kao said.
Kip angled his lightsaber to one side, the blade extended in front of him. Move out of the way, and we'll go the rest of the distance. Ching Kao turned slightly to glance at the Yamosk.
Of course, the life of a Yamosk for that of a Jedi. It strikes me as equitable.
From off to Kip's left, Ganner hurled his ignited lightsaber square into the Yamosk's left eye. As the sulfurous yellow energy blade struck, the Yamosk shrieked, and its tentacles flailed, generating waves that cascaded down over the retaining wall of the pool and washed across the deck. The Yamosk reared up and began to sway from side to side. Gradually, the tentacles stopped moving, and the creature sank down into the tank, dead by the time Ganner called the lightsaber back to him. Ching Kao's sadness endured for only a moment.
Well executed, Jedi. But you have doomed us all.
A shudder passed through the ship, even as the words were leaving his mouth.
The Yamosk controls the ship,
Rhonda explained.
The pilot Dovin Basils are now in the throes of death.
Ching Kao grinned faintly.
No one gets out of here alive.
Kip returned the grin. This won't be the first time you've misjudged a situation, Commander. He scanned the attendants, then set his gaze on Ching Kao. Any or all of you are free to come with us. When it was obvious that none of them were going to budge, Kip shrugged.
Suit yourselves.
He backed into the passageway, Ganner to one side, Rhonda to the other. They had just entered an adjacent module when Kip's comlink toned.
What's your situation, Kip?
Kip recognized Han Solo's voice. We're outward bound. The ship's destroying itself.
A splinter group of Yuzhong Vong warships are on their way. Not much chance of our holding them off.
Can you bring the Falcon close enough to extend a cofferdam? Han snorted.
That's the least of our problems.
By the way, can you accommodate a hut? Solo launched a surprised laugh.
A hut? Oh, sure. The more the merrier.
Then you'll be glad to hear that one of the captives asked me to send his regards.
Who?
Roa.
Take the shot,
Sal Solo hissed through his clenched teeth.
Take it, for the sake of the New Republic,
the captain said.
No, my boy, no,
Ebrahim and Q-9 said. Anakin ignored them and looked at Jason.
Tell me,
he said. Jason responded quietly and calmly.
You are my brother, and you are a Jedi, Anakin. You can't do this.
Anakin took a deep breath and moved his hand away from the hand grip trigger.
The tension in the room broke with a collective exhalation of disappointment. The technicians grumbled, and the Milici hung their heads in defeat. The next thing Anakin knew, someone had shoved him forcibly from the control seat.
"I'll take the shot," Thrakken Salsolo shouted angrily as his hand closed on the trigger.
Led by the Yald, the task force from Kaminor decanted outside the orbit of Thondor's outermost moon. Following them into real space came the battle dragons and battle cruisers that made up the Haven fleet, positioned to engage the Yuuzhan Vong armada at close range. Commodore Brand had allowed Leia to join him on the bridge, where she stood just behind his command chair, gazing through the wraparound viewport at the reverting Haven warships. Closer to Thondor, explosions flared in the night as vessels and shipyards succumbed to the enemy onslaught.
"You may fire when ready,"
she heard Brand telling Prince Isolde.
All at once, a flash of radiant energy illuminated local space.
From rimward of Thondor's outermost moon, or perhaps gushed from hyperspace itself, came a torrent of starfire 1,000 kilometers wide. Coalescing into a savage beam of focused annihilation, it tore into the midst of the dispersing Haven fleet, consuming every ship in its path. Fighter groups vanished without a trace.
Leia was dumbfounded. Nothing in the Yuuzhan Vong arsenal had prepared her for devastation on so immense a scale.
Her stupefaction deepened when the beam didn't diminish as it punched through the Haven fleet. Lancing deeper into Thondor space, it ripped, unabated, into the heart of the enemy armada, obliterating masses of coral skippers and pulverizing several of the largest warships.
Everyone was simply too stunned to speak or cry out, much less make sense of what they had just witnessed. "Some sort of repulsor beam,"
a tech finally said in stark disbelief.
"Delivered through hyperspace."
"Center point," Leia said as if in shock. Brand and several others turned to her. She looked at the Commodore.
"Someone, fire. Center point station."
Han embraced Roa as he came through the airlock in the Falcon's portside docking arm.
"Vasgo stay,"
Roa said when Han let him go. Han shook his head in dismay.
"He could have been a friend."
Han ran his eyes over his friend and managed to grin.
"You know, you don't look half bad. The half that does, I'll have repaired. Did my ship survive?"
"Waiting for you at Bilbrinji."
Roa loosed a sigh and turned to help a Rin female out of the airlock.
"Han, I'd like you to meet..." "Any chance you have a clanmate named Droma?"
Han interrupted. The female looked surprised.
"I had a brother named Droma."
Han's grin broadened.
"You'll be seeing him soon enough."
Roa scratched his head.
"Seems I have a lot to catch up on. But that doesn't begin to say it."
With the airlock resealed, Han, Roa, and two of the Rin threaded their way to the cockpit. Han squeezed into the pilot's seat and began to maneuver the Falcon away from the Yuuzhan Vong vessel. Roa helped bring the quad lasers online as Han nosed the Falcon over the top of the spherical module, expecting to have to engage the enemy warships that had broken from the armada to render aid to the crippled Yamask vessel. Instead, he was greeted by a sight that tugged a gleeful cry from him.
"Haven battle dragons,"
he said, glancing at Roa.
"Now we're getting somewhere."
He was about to add that Leia had more than likely been responsible for enlisting the Haven's support when an intense white radiance blinded him. The Falcon died, then was tossed through an end-over-end ride that deposited her 2,000 kilometers from where she had been. The Yuuzhan Vong had coaxed Fondor's son to go Nova, Han told himself. They had wiped out the entire system. When his vision returned and the moans and groans of his tumbled cargo had died down, Han saw that 3/4 of the Haven fleet and half the Yuuzhan Vong armada were gone. On his Helix flagship, Nazjoka recaptured enough of his self-control to keep some of the dismay out of the incredulous look he showed Malik Kaar and Nom Anor. Against the backdrop of a raised moon, The Villip Choir field showed the blackened skeletons and husks of untold numbers of Yuzhang Vong and enemy ships.
They killed most of their reinforcements to eliminate half of our force, the Supreme Commander said. Is such savagery commonplace?
Nom Anno shook his head as much in response as to clear it.
A mistake. It has to be a mistake. Their reverence for life has always been their weakness.
Then, perhaps we've managed to bring out the primitive in them,
Malekar said in a stunned voice. A herald appeared. The Villip in his trembling hands bore the strained features of Qin Kao.
The Yamosk has been killed,
Qin Kao gasped through his communicator.
And the ship is dying. The huts betrayed our location to the Jedi. The Jedi, captured on Jindain, will die with us. But two of his confederates and Randa Vissaritiori, the murderers of the Yamosk, escaped. We...
The Villip fell silent suddenly, then everted to its featureless form. Qin Kao was dead. Nazchuka turned away in disgust.
Now we have a score to settle with the Hutts.
Aboard the shuttle that was to return the Hapens to the Battle Dragon Song of War, Isolde was standing at the cabin's broad viewport, his back turned to the hatch. Leia waited for him to turn from the view of Coruscant's impossibly tall towers before moving toward him, but the pained expression on his face brought her to a halt after only two steps.
Isolde, I'm so sorry,
she blurted, eyes brimming with tears. Isolde glanced away from her for a moment.
I've been asking myself if it would have been easier to have been defeated by the Yuzhang Vong rather than by misdirected fire from a weapon we didn't even know existed.
A weapon enabled by Anakin,
Leia said quietly.
Who also refused to fire it,
Isolde was quick to point out.
Leia, you must understand that we accept what has happened to us without hostility or regret.
She held his sad gaze.
What will happen now?
He ran his hand over his mouth.
Well, I don't anticipate a triumphant homecoming. The consortium has split along lines dictated by the vote that landed us here. The naysayers have declared a victory, despite the fact that we have all suffered a dreadful loss. They're calling for a policy of isolation, as if the transitory mists alone will be able to protect us from the long reach of the Yuzhang Vong.
Perched on the edge of his father's favorite chair in their apartment on Coruscant, Jason watched in dismay as a 3D image of Thrakken Sel Solo took shape above the Holonet well. The voice of the Solistan news anchor continued.
Former head of the so-called Human League, Thrakken Sel Solo is being credited with turning the tide at the Battle of Fondor. While scores of New Republic warships were destroyed in the Yuzhang Vong sneak attack on Fondor's orbital construction facilities, Sal Solo's bold use of a hyperspace repulsor beam not only drove the invaders into retreat, but destroyed a significant portion of their fleet.
You ever going to get tired of listening to reports about Corellia?
Anakin interrupted from the doorway to the family room.
We turned Cousin Thrakken into a hero. What else needs to be said?
Jason silenced the Holonet.
Cheer up.
At least this report didn't mention us by name.
Anakin scowled. Good. Now all we have to do is hope that Dad doesn't hear about it.
Since when does Dad care about the news?
Besides, you're the one the Holonet should be calling a hero. For what? Enabling Center Point?
No, for not triggering it. That's what'll make Dad and Uncle Luke and anyone else who knows the full story proud of you. Anakin snorted a laugh and shook his head.
You still don't get it.
He stared at his brother.
I could have fired Center Point without hitting the Hapens. I saw it all, Jason, in my head. I would have known where to direct the repulsor beam and precisely when to fire.
Then why didn't you fire? What stopped you?
You mean, aside from your telling me not to?
Jason's brows knitted in concern.
You were that sure of yourself? Yeah, I was. And my actions would have been defensive. If someone is aiming a blaster at your ally, do you raise your lightsaber to prevent it? Or do you do nothing, because a Jedi isn't supposed to take aggressive action? I mean, where's the line, Jason?
We're in a war for survival, and defense sometimes means having to eliminate the opposition.
Jason shook his head.
I don't know where the line is.
Anakin smirked.
Well, when you figure it out, I hope you'll let me in on it.
Jason looked up at him.
Oh, I will, brother. You can count on that.
Leia had raced home from the shuttle departure platform, only to find that Anakin and Jason had already left. Now, with the soldier's cheerless departure still on her mind, and C-3PO helping her pack for an afternoon flight to Duro, the house comm system chirped. Chirping insistently even after she had activated the answer message function. Throwing her hands up in a gesture of surrender, she accepted the call. Hans was the last face she expected to see appear on the display screen.
It's just me,
he said, smiling lopsidedly. The display showed that he was calling from an Abrogado Ray space terminal.
I see you shaved off your beard.
He rubbed his chin.
Yeah, too itchy.
Well, at least you look like your old self again.
He scowled, started to say something, then began again.
Grim business about what happened to the Hapens at Fondor. How's Isolde doing?
I figured you'd hear the news sooner or later.
Hear about it?
Han said.
I saw it.
You what?
I was there at Fondor.
You were at Fondor? She echoed in disbelief.
It's a long, boring story. The point is, I saw the Hapen fleet get wiped out. But I thought Fondor's primary went Nova. I didn't know it was center point.
Leia pushed her hair back from her forehead.
You realized that Anakin and Jason were there?
Han took his lower lip between his teeth.
Did they fire it?
Leia's nostrils flared.
Do you think they'd do something like that?
Han's brow furrowed.
Take it easy. You know I don't listen to the news.
Leia thought about telling him about Thrakken Sal Solo's sudden rise to fame, but decided against it, knowing that Han would find out soon enough.
Where did you bring the refugees you rescued?
Here, but they can't stay for long. Abrogado Ray is pulling in the welcome mat.
Leia sighed. Selkor is searching for a world suitable for relocating everyone, and is getting some unexpected help from Senator Shesh. I'll let you know as soon as I hear anything. Han nodded.
As long as it's somewhere the Rin won't be treated like riffraff.
You have my word on it.
Leia paused, then added, will Droma be remaining with his clanmates?
Yeah. The way I figure it, he and I are about even.
So, where does that leave you, Han?
I'm not sure. What about you? Are you finally home for good?
I'm leaving this afternoon for Duro.
Same old Princess Leia,
he said with a sneer.
Then I guess it doesn't matter where I end up.
She narrowed her eyes for the cam.
Same old Han Solo.
He tried to lighten the moment with a laugh.
We are a pair, aren't we?
I don't know, Han. You tell me.
His eyes flashed.
Well, look. Be sure to let me know what planet Selkor decides on.
Anything to help the refugees,
Leia said with counterfeit good humor.
That's what I've been saying all along.
Leia folded her arms.
In that case, our paths are bound to cross one of these days.
I don't know, sweetheart. It's a big galaxy.
Only as big as you make it, she said, deactivating the comm.
Senator Shesh,
the human secretary said.
There's a Pedric Cuff here to see you. He admits to not having an appointment, but he claims that you have been trying to contact him for the past few months.
Vicky Shesh leaned back in her swivel chair.
I've been trying to contact him?
That's what he says.
When Shesh glanced at the hollow display for the reception room, she saw a very tall and gaunt human smiling for the cam.
Send him in,
she told her secretary. Cuff entered the office a moment later, tendering a brief but dignified bow before settling into the armchair to which she waved him.
I have long anticipated this meeting, he began. I had hoped to speak with you sooner, but I've been preoccupied with business matters in the Outer Rim and in hot space.
Shesh brought her interlaced hands to her lips and studied Cuff over the tops of her extended forefingers.
I trust that matters concluded to your satisfaction.
Cuff smiled without showing his teeth.
To be perfectly honest, my associates and I were recently taken somewhat by surprise by a hostile bid for power by a Corellian firm. But otherwise, yes, everything has been working out to our satisfaction. Shesh could feel the blood racing through her veins, but she managed to keep her composure.
Why have you come to see me now?
My superiors thought it a good idea that we become acquainted. To begin with, they wanted to thank you for your efforts of some months past in seeing to it that some missing property was returned to us. Cuff let the statement hang in the air. Shesh guessed that he was referring to Elan, the phony defector the Yuzhang Vong had attempted to foist on the Jedi Knights. But she couldn't be certain that he wasn't a New Republic intelligence agent hoping to trick her into revealing her part in that affair, or the Fondor calamity.
"I don't recall helping return any property to you," she said after a moment. "And to be frank, I don't recall attempting to contact you. Perhaps you have me confused with someone else."
Pedrick Cuff stared at her. "I see. Well, perhaps I have made a mistake. It wouldn't be the first time a hut has led me astray."
"A hut?" Shesh said.
Cuff laughed shortly. "And here I was, all set to launch into a discussion regarding the eventual disposition of..." He gestured broadly to the windows at Shesh's back. "All this."
He stood up.
"A pity we can't do business, Senator. I suspect we would have made a good team."
She watched him head for the door, then said,
"Did I mention that I like your suit?"
He stopped and turned to her, his smile back in place.
"Yes, it fits me like a glove, don't you think? Masks, all my imperfections, truly allows me to blend in. I had it specially made by a company that's simply out of this world."
"Does the company produce a line of women's wear?"
"They offer an exquisite line. In fact, I'm certain they could supply you with outfits perfectly tailored to your needs."
Cuff paused briefly.
"That is, of course, if you might, on occasion, be willing to put business before politics."
Shesh waved Cuff back to the chair.
"Politics is a practical profession," she said. "If someone has what you need, then you do business with him or you go without. And personally, I've always been more interested in business than I have in politics."
Other titles in the Star Wars series available on audio from Random House Audiobooks are The New Jedi Order, Vector Prime, Darktide 1, Onslaught, Darktide 2, Ruin, and Agents of Chaos 1, Hero's Trial. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Agents of Chaos 2, Jedi Eclipse, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2000, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Panta Music. Music master production, copyright 2000, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audiobooks presentation.